Hey, and welcome to today's episode, which is going to be podcast only because I'm going to read what I wrote, as I often do with pieces that are very abstract or are maybe more personal, just because it's a little easier that way to convey the message that I'm trying to convey. So this one's going to be about anxiety, which is a little bit of a frightening topic for me to tackle. So I appreciate all of your patience as I get through this. Okay, so I've been struggling with anxiety. Actually, this isn't a new thing. This is something that's come and gone in my life, but it's been a thing, especially lately. So I'm going to share a story and some thoughts. A little while ago, my daughter was going through a mild illness when, out of the blue, she developed a terrible cough. Just very suddenly. I was listening to her cough in the evening, feeling the normal degree, I think, of parental worry, until she had this one particularly terrible cough, which was so filled with fluid that she struggled to breathe for several seconds. And I ran to her bedside, pulled out all the stops to help ease her coughing. I dialed the health line. I asked advice from a nurse. I took her to the doctor the next day. We were told that she just had a regular illness. And I was anxious for the next week, following a strict cough-reducing regimen for the evenings to follow. And fortunately, nothing like that one bad cough recurred, but it really scared me. She recovered, and we all moved on. Unfortunately, unbeknownst to me, I developed a phobia from this experience. So recently, she picked up another illness. It's honestly, like all the kids I know this year, it's been wave after wave of illness. And one evening recently, she coughed. And immediately, before I could even think, I felt the familiar wave of panic-induced adrenaline in my blood and all of the alertness, fast heart rate, and jitteriness that panic entails. My reaction went directly from cough to fight or flight. No decisions were made on my part. My thinking about her cough did not make me anxious. There was no time to think. It was like that all evening. Every single cough meant a jolt of panic. It was a difficult evening. And isn't timing the damnedest? So the very next morning, of course, my partner left to travel out of country. So it's just me and my sick kid home all day. The recipe for an absolute anxiety nightmare. No one to buffer the fear. No one to help if the terrible cough returned. What if she got really ill? What if I had to take her to the hospital, etc.? 100 such thoughts. You know those irritating respiratory illnesses that don't feel too bad? Except at night when you're trying to sleep and then you cough nearly constantly because of some unresolvable tickle in your throat. That's what it was like being with her that next night when it was just me and her. Murphy's Law might have well been booming over ethereal speakers. You're terrified of your kid having a cough, especially when you're alone? Awesome, have both. And let's make that cough constant just to dial up the excitement. And a sidebar, a moment of self-awareness. Yes, I know that my child's cough isn't all about me. I hope I'm not conveying that that's how I feel, but this is still going to be my story. That night and the next, I navigated her rocky sleeps and near constant cough. I breathed deep and necessary sighs of relief when she would finally sleep, and it was an easy sleep once she arrived at it. On day one of her coughing, every cough pierced through my soul like an electric shock, feeling wave after wave of panic. On day two, though, it was okay. And on day three, it was even more okay. Still stressful, but much more in that normal parental stress kind of way. So why? Why was that first night so bad? Why didn't subsequent nights of coughing, especially being alone and without support, cause my anxiety to go through the roof? Did I just get used to it? I think this is an example of the psychological concept of phobias at play and how they get worsened and helped. If you're afraid of dogs, for example, and you see a dog on the sidewalk up ahead, do you then cross the street to get away from it? And if you cross the street, how does that impact your fear of dogs? Well, it turns out that crossing the street and avoiding the dog ends up increasing your phobia. It bolsters it. You get more scared of dogs if you do this. This is because your behavior is reinforcing your fear, which is telling your mind and your body that dogs are indeed worth being afraid of because you're behaving in a way where dogs are scary. Even though avoiding the dog relieves momentary fear, it ends up contributing to a longer and deeper fear of dogs. The more these interactions happen, the worse the fear gets. So it seems I developed a phobia from this first illness, from that cough. People, as a side note, with anxiety disorders are more prone to develop phobias than the general population. And throughout my adulthood, I've probably wavered in and out of the diagnostic criterion for having an anxiety disorder, which seems to be mostly genetically rooted. Anyways, then for the next 3 months after that first illness, I worried about her getting sick again in all kinds of ways. I was cautious in groups, careful with hand washing and so on. I worried about asthma. I worried about food allergies and all kinds of boogeymen. And then it happened. She did what kids do. She got sick and I couldn't avoid it, sidestep it, or hand wash it away. The dog, so to speak, was in my path and I had to keep walking on. And it was terrifying. And then it wasn't. I passed the dog on the path again and again, and it got less scary. The fear deflated. Her illness became a normal illness. It became a normal throat-irritated coughing. And surprisingly, the two of us ended up having a great time, playing card games and watching TV while I joined my university classes from my laptop. We drank smoothies and ordered pizza and slept in. We made a checklist for the day, we hung up a map and read stories and practiced phonics. What was initially a terrifying proposition ended up being a really enjoyable few days of bonding. It would have been even better if she wasn't sick. It's worth mentioning that there is a really useful practice for phobias called systematic desensitization. This is basically a concept most of you are probably familiar with, exposure therapy, but it's just a more nuanced version of it. So exposure therapy really does work. A term for being exposed to your fear all at once is flooding, which is just a much more intense version. Imagine having a fear of dogs and then being put in a room full of dogs with no gradual incline. You just go right to the hard stuff. That would be flooding. That is exposure therapy in the way that most of us think about it. With systematic desensitization, what you do is you practice relaxation techniques while being exposed to your fear, but only in little escalating bits at a time. So for example, if you're afraid of dogs, it's useful to picture an encounter with a dog in your imagination, all while practicing relaxation, typically with a therapist's assistance. You'd imagine situations graduating from least to most scary. And if at any point along the way you started responding anxiously, you would practice relaxation techniques. This would happen over a period of time. Ideally, to conquer a phobia, you'd also practice it in real life, not just in your imagination. You want to condition yourself by combining relaxation practice at the same time that you're experiencing the anxiety. Of course, this is challenging work, but as far as I'm aware, it's among the most helpful, if not the most helpful, strategy in conquering a phobia. I accidentally had a lesson in this with my daughter's illness, and it's a good reminder of how easily fear can sprout up. For anyone who has anxiety issues, you know that the issues come and go. Some periods of time feel pretty easy, and other periods leave you worried in most situations. At this moment in time, I think there are a lot of us dealing with heightened anxiety for one reason or another, be it the political or economic climate, the pandemic, and the life stressors that come along with these, or overuse of news and social media, less time with friends, or any combination of the above. And this isn't uncommon either. So generalized anxiety disorder, which has fairly severe criterion to meet, affects 3% of the American population. The number is much higher though when we're talking about mild to moderate anxiety. So to meet the criterion for GAD, generalized anxiety disorder, according to the DSM-5 manual, you need to experience excessive anxiety and worry and clinically significant distress. So this isn't just your garden variety, worrying about your partner's driving abilities or being stressed out before an exam. This is spending more than half of your day in a state of worrying, chronic worrying. This is over a period of many months. Compared to perhaps a baseline of spending, the number is 18% that I read, spending 18% of your day worried, which is the general population's state of worry apparently. So I guess most of us default to being worried about 1/5 of our day or thinking anxious thoughts of some kind, and that's normal. So I think maybe some people would be less than that, but I think it's also worth noting that it's really common to have anxious thoughts every day, and we all pretty much average out to having them. So there's not, I think for most of us, some mythical, entirely worry-free state of bliss that is out there to achieve. But going from, say, 60% of your day worrying to 18% of your day worrying would mark a significant shift in the quality of one's life. 2022 was a very difficult year for me, and it left me with a lot of trust wounds, not just with other people, but with life itself. It's interesting how these seeds don't sprout immediately either. My personal crisis of 2022 was in the spring and summer, and I spent most of the year feeling largely unscathed despite localized stressors. But those seeds were growing roots, and I didn't know that. But they've begun sprouting in the last few months. I'm certainly on an anxiety upswing, not only prompted by my child's cough, other situations as well, which means my priority is to focus significant effort in finding or rediscovering inner equilibrium. Anxiety is very painful to experience. It's excruciating in the peak of panic. And it leaves one with the feeling of needing to do something, anything, because to not do anything is intolerable. So I'll probably write more on this at a later date, but at the moment, I'm either implementing or planning to implement the following: no or low caffeine, adequate hydration, daily exercise, cardio is especially protective, but yoga helps me a lot too, low or no alcohol consumption, early to bed, early to rise, no Reddit before bedtime, an omega-3 supplement, which is high in EPAs, daily meditation, reading physical books, spending more time with friends and family, having more downtime, and balance, with an asterisk. I'll get back to that. This, in addition to other practices I've already been following, such as vitamin D supplementation in the winter, adequate fruit and veggie consumption, and so on, is what I've been working on, or what I want to work on. On the advice of my therapist, I'm to work on all of the above for a while to see if it improves the anxiety, cover the basics. If I'm still struggling, then medication, I suppose, would be the next step. There's no stigma, by the way, for medicating a mental illness. I mean, diabetics take insulin because their body's dysfunctional in producing it. So if there's a problem with one's neurotransmitters, such as your serotonin and dopamine systems, there is no shame in taking medication for that. There's no gold medal that one gets awarded for gritting one's teeth and toughing it out. But again, cover the basics first and go from there. I mean, it's amazing what daily cardiovascular exercise movement can do. I've been neglecting basically all of those healthy habits seen above that I have just listed for a year. So there is significant room for improvement. Now, to the last point on the list, the balance, finding balance and not overworking, is one that I will definitely expand on at a later point. But just as a cliff notes, the last year for me has been full throttle. I've completed basically 2 years of university in less than 1.5 years, which is, I haven't done it yet. I'm just kind of looking ahead. But ultimately, it's an unsustainable tempo at this phase in my life, which is filled with anxiety. I love university. It's deeply enjoyable. And it's like my favorite thing right now. But and despite the fact that I really want to go full throttle on it, I just can't. I can't right now. So I'll finish up the semester and then I'll take the summer off. And I'll consider taking a reduced load in the fall in order to reclaim some of that balance. And then going forward in the fall, I probably can't reasonably work, and work, I'm qualifying business and school here, more than 30 to 40 hours per week, and I'll plan accordingly. It's difficult to write and share about anxiety, and in this case, talk about it, because a lot of shame seems to come along for the ride. Admitting anxiety is like conceding failure. It's admitting that I do not have my shit together, guys. And why would any of you want to listen to or read from someone who doesn't have their shit together? At the moment, I'm reading Michelle Obama. She's my close friend. I refer to her by her first name. Michelle Obama's second book, which the title is eluding me, something, The Light We Carry, something like that. Anyway, I'm reminded of the power of personal anecdotes as I read this, the power of revealing the messy stuff in life. I empathize and then I learn from her experiences, and I really do benefit from her vulnerability. It's my hope that someone somewhere may benefit from mine, and this thought helps me overcome my own fear of being vulnerable. Because ultimately what I'm yearning for is the real, genuine connecting, a link through space and time from me to you. Free from illusions, free from bullshit, to the extent that that's possible. life can be hard and there's so much suffering, but connecting is healing. As I'm writing this, and not as I'm speaking this, but when I was writing this, I feel a little more awake in my own body, glancing around the coffee shop, golden sunlight bright in my eyes 10 minutes before sunset. I'm remembering what it's for. And this remembering is because I'm writing to you. And now as I sit in my lamplit basement room, as I'm talking to you, thank you for letting me share these thoughts, allowing me to be vulnerable, and helping me find something real. You rock. Much love.